Welcome to our show, Examine Life, on KKRN at 88.5 FM in Bella Vista, Round Mountain.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Pat.
And tonight, Pat, primarily, is going to talk about joint replacements, not doobies, joints.
You know someone in your family, at work, a relative that has either had or going to have joint replacement, and chances are possibly you even are looking at that. So we're going to talk about that tonight.
Sooner or later, and all you adrenaline junkies out there, we know you're going to.
Just so you know, views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts, guests, and participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio and Acorn Community Enterprises or the underwriters of the station.
And shoulders, I notice, is on the agenda. I had a relative in-law who a truck fell on him, and he's fully recovered. He was pretty young when it happened, but had a lot of major damage done around the back and side of the shoulder, I think it was.
The most common are knees, hips, and shoulders. I have a relative that has had an elbow replacement, so there are other joints, but the most common are knees, hips, and joints. Shoulders. And shoulders, I understand, are the most difficult recovery.
I would imagine they're pretty complicated joints, and there's a lot going on in there.
Well, you can imagine all the motions that your arms make that involve your shoulder, and it's because of that that it's really the post-op is really difficult, the physical therapy. And when you think about women getting dressed when you're putting on a bra and you have to hook behind your back, that would be really dramatic. Even putting your arm in the sleeve of a coat.
Yeah,
how complicated that is that would affect you if you had shoulder replacements.
And there's always that Houdini move that women do where they remove and put on the bra without ever taking anything else off. That's just always amazing. I've seen it happen in less than 10 seconds.
Yeah, in movies they even have it that it's funny. Partial replacement can also be done, and it's usually on the knee. And there are actually four compartments that make up the knee capsule. And if you only have two of those damaged, then they can do a partial knee replacement. I was scheduled to have a partial knee replacement earlier this year, but wound up having a total knee replacement.
And you're probably going to talk about this later, but I'm a big, big fan of doing the physical therapy. I've met many people over the years doing the work that I do that have had, say, back problems or knee problems for decades, and are in a lot of narcotics. And you can always tell because you ask people, well, how did the physical therapy, did they give you good physical therapy to do? And the ones that still have the chronic pain are the ones who didn't believe in the physical therapy, thought it was stupid or hurt too much. So, yeah, they have chronic pain for the rest of their life.
My business partner has had both her hips replaced over the last 18 months, and she had physical therapy. They did it. They came to her house to do it because it was difficult for her to walk, obviously, for a while. But interestingly, your hips determine the length of your legs. So it's very crucial that they make sure both your legs are exactly the same length when you have hip replacement. And a lot of that has to do with the muscle tension when they go to do the replacement because they replace bone structure and joints. But they try and leave muscles intact and get them to relax so that they can manipulate the joint to put it back, the new one in. But it's very difficult if you've had, she had had a decade of problems with her hips and the muscle had actually shrunk up and pulled her hip up and out of the socket. That's why she had to have the surgery. And she's now having difficulty with her length of her legs are not exactly perfect, so she has a lift in her shoe now.
I had a half-sister, died a few years ago, wonderful woman. She was a polio poster child back in the 40s and 50s in Los Angeles. And she had, because of the polio, she had one leg shorter than the other. And up into her 50s, she was that way. And she even made a limp look graceful. I mean, she had a very exaggerated limp because of that leg, but she made it look graceful. But what happened to her was, what actually ended her life was that she had a young physician, a young osteo physician, say that he could fix that leg because she was always walking at a slant because of the leg. And so he did fix it, and she was walking straight. She was thrilled. For the first time since she was probably 9 years old, she was walking straight up and down. Well, the problem with that is that he didn't foresee, because he was a young physician, is that when you're walking at a slant, that means your head is always tilted.
Oh, yes.
Angled. And so now her head was straight, and it ruined her cervical discs. And so then they had to do surgery for that, and the hospital in Oregon, we've had a lot of bad luck in Oregon, but the hospital in Oregon didn't watch her for infection, and that was the end of the story. But the point being that when you have these things done, like you were mentioning, hips causing your leg length, you have to be aware of a lot of things other than the particular area that you're operating on.
Yes, yes. Prior to replacement, there are options. And sometimes they are just to prolong the inevitable. Other things are, you may not have a bad enough injury. You might not be old enough. There's a lot of considerations and other options that you might have. The NSAIDs are primarily the first drug that they will introduce to relieve the pain, where so that you don't have to have a surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And
or anti-inflammatories as well.
Yes, yes. But they can lead to liver and kidney toxicity over time for long-term use. So it's not something that you want to use for 10 years.
No.
You know?
Any medication that you cannot have to take, it should always be the last resort.
Yeah. Even the steroid injections are for severe flare-ups. They're for temporary. They immediate relief, but it's long-lasting. It usually lasts 6 to 12 months. But they don't want to do more than two or three of those because of the damage that it causes. There's also a type of injection where one or two to decrease the inflammation. And usually it's Kenalog or Celecine. And they have a quick and long-lasting relief of symptoms, too, and that's just an injection into the joint itself rather than just a oral type of steroid type or an injection that would be through the body in the arm.
And I think there, you never can tell how much pain someone else has, but it's my opinion that nowadays people don't want to have any pain, and I know that I had some arthritis in one of my knees a few years ago, and I mean it was extremely painful. If I tried to bend my knee, it just felt like somebody was shoving a hot rod through it. And so I went to a doctor who told me, well, you know, you're in your 50s, so it's going to happen. And so I went to another doctor, and I said, first of all, I don't want you to tell me how old I am, because
right.
I know that. What I want to know is exactly what's wrong with my knee, and can I do all the stuff that I want to do to stay fit? So he did a complete assessment, and he said, yes, you know what? It's just arthritis. Your knee joint's good, so you're going to have a lot of pain, but you can do whatever you want. And lo and behold, when I just ignored the pain and did what I had to do, you know what? I don't have the pain anymore. The arthritis is better. And the point I'm making is that be sure that you need the surgery, and be sure that whatever they give you to do to try to prevent it, that you do it.
Yes.
Many people don't do it, and then they blame it on the doctor.
Yes. There is an unusual injectable. It's called viscosupplementation, where they inject what they call you probably can pronounce that better than me, hyaluronate. It's a fluid prosthesis.
Isn't it like a gel or something?
Yeah,
that hardens
for osteoarthritis. It doesn't actually gel. It thickens the fluid that the osteoarthritis thins, mm-hmm. so that you don't get any lubrication. So this is like a thickening of the viscosity of the fluid in your knee.
Is that the same thing they're using on the discs now, or that's probably a different thing? Huh?
Yeah, I don't know what they're using.
They're replacing some discs with something.
Yes.
It's
an injectable, too, as I understand. So this is usually, it takes three or four of these shots, and they're done a week apart. And this can give you 6 to 12 months relief, buying you time for surgery further down the road. My sister had some elbow issues, and they did a stem cell process for her, where they took her stem cells, created a fluid, and then injected it back. And I asked the doctor when I went with her if that was a possibility for my knee, because this was about a year, because I had suffered terribly for the last year before I had it done. And she said, no, because your knees are weight-bearing and your elbow is not. So whatever the injectable my sister had, and it fixed her elbow, they couldn't do on your knee. So weight-bearing joints, are they treat totally different. So
yeah, oftentimes you assume what the story is without going to a real professional. And, of course, hopefully it's a good professional. I had sciatica for a few decades that was disabling when it flared up, and all I did was the proper application of ice that a physical therapist told me about and said to never use the heat on it.
Yes.
So I didn't. And I literally, after 20 years of this, I cured it and with the ice. And again, it was sciatica. It wasn't a slipped disc or a gone knee. But still, it was disabling, and it no longer exists.
Arthritis is one of the most common problems with losing range of motion in your knee. And it can be from an injury, even a minor injury. Arthritis can start. It usually is age-related. But they've had joint nutrition for that cartilage protection has been shown with the chondroitin sulfate. I'm sure you've heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
It actually has a blood-thinning effect similar to heparin. So you need to be careful if you're going to start taking that, because it's an over-the-counter thing. If you're on a blood thinner, you might not want to take that chondroitin sulfate. It also, a lot of the clinical trials have been done in combination with glucosamine. If you're diabetic, you have to be careful, because glucosamine contains a sugar. But these treat the symptoms. The inflammatory cells of arthritis secrete damaging chemicals that actually degrade the cartilage. And neither of these supplements repair that cartilage. It just stops the pain and inflammation.
Well, that was my point about the ice, was that the reason he told me that, because he was the first one that said don't use heat. Everyone else said ice and heat. And the thing that he made clear to me was that the thing that causes most of your pain is not the injury, it's the inflammation. And the inflammation is a chemical process that your blood brings to the site as a healing thing when it doesn't need to heal anymore. And by bringing that blood, the inflammatory chemicals to the site, then the joint becomes inflamed, which draws more blood, which brings more chemicals. And so the ice just stops that cycle. And it was a very simple process with no medication, and literally from disabling pain to no limits in
yes.
a few years.
Cartilage lacks blood vessels, limiting its ability to repair itself. So these herbs, they're supplements, basically, help with the inflammatory responses, but it doesn't really do anything for the cartilage. There's a couple of herbs, Chinese skullcap and kutch tree. They do the same thing as those supplements. Excuse me. But there is a third herb. I'm sorry, I guess. Why didn't you take the top of this page?
So cartilage lacks blood vessels, as Pat was saying, and so you have trouble, you have a limit on the ability to repair itself. And so if you can add the things that you need that will help to take care of the joint without obviously, feeding, because there's nothing to feed there. But if you can do something with the fluid, like the medication we were talking about before, the injections, there are things you can do for the joint which can relieve the pain. And again, the big thing in my philosophy is to look at the medications you're taking and always try to avoid as much medication as you can, because generally speaking, what the medication is doing is probably not good for you. It's even the pain that it's controlling in an abnormal way.
I'm allergic to a lot of drugs, so I have resorted to herbs a lot. And one of the ones that I've stumbled across that actually has had some clinical studies done on it is called white mulberry. And it actually impedes the cartilage breakdown process and slows the progress of arthritis. And it's the first one herbal medication that they have found, and this is new cutting-edge research, and they refer to white mulberry as catchu. That's what the way they call it if you were trying to look up an herb, if you want to look up the herb. But it does help impede that cartilage damage that the inflammatory response causes.
So, but they don't have the chemical pathway or anything that that makes that happen?
I don't know how that impedes it, other than that is the, one of the things that they found that actually slows the progress of arthritis, where the all the other medications that we take, the either prescription medications, they just treat the symptoms. They don't actually treat the damaged cartilage.
Right. And when we talk about ice or even something else that reduces inflammation, that's a key thing to remember, is the inflammatory process is not just causing pain. It's further damaging the joint. And so anything you can do, I think that's why the ice was so effective, because anything you can do to stop that cycle of inflammation, you're stopping further damage at the same time. And I found actual muscle building activity like weightlifting, when I have a joint that's sore, I move it that morning. But in addition to that, I do weightlifting activities with other muscle groups, and that activity reduces the inflammatory response in the joint that's hurting, because the stressing your muscles like that actually helps the inflammatory response.
Doesn't exercise actually help release dopamine also?
It does. So, but, I mean, the pain stays away. It improves it.
And dopamine is a feel-good enzyme in your body,
right,
that would help mask any pain that you're having.
Right. Yeah, I'm a believer in experiencing pain if you want to lessen the pain.
Arthroscopic surgery is one of the most common now for torn cartilage or meniscus, and it's usually done in the knee, where the surgeon inserts three instruments in tiny little incisions, one for viewing, one for irrigating, and one for trimming, to repair or remove damaged tissue. It also can remove small amounts of arthritis.
I remember years ago at Mercy Hospital, they did a little seminar when video games were still kind of a new phenomenon. And Mercy made the big point. They had kind of a little fake arthroscopy set up there. And the point was that video games are good for kids because they'll teach them how to be arthroscopic surgeons.
Oh, good. Okay. That's a good point, you know.
Right, because they're kind of using a remote control device.
And it's the least invasive of all of the surgeries, and it only takes about an hour. I've had two of them, and I regained 100% use of my knee after each of them. And the procedure can involve removing the torn cartilage, smoothing of the cartilage, trimming any joint linings or loose arthritic tissue. The point of it is to let you get roughly three more years of use of your knee or the joint that they're doing it on. It's not intended to be to last you the rest of your life. I was lucky enough, after I had the first one, I got 9 years before I suffered another injury that required another arthroscopic surgery. And the second time, it only lasted 4 years before. And I did not suffer another injury. It's just by then the ballooning and swelling of the joint started to reoccur, and that headed me for surgery. Even though I postponed it a year, I probably shouldn't have, because there was a lot of damage done by then.
I spent some time, a little bit of time as a scrub tech in a hospital, and the surgery suite that we had, the scrub tech, when they weren't in one of the operating rooms, they were in this room in the center of all of them. And all of them had glass everywhere, so you could see all the surgeries going on. And I just remember the only knee surgery that I remember seeing, and there was this little doctor, I think he was Asian, he was very small stature, and I remember him up on this table on his knees over the patient, and the patient's knee was bent and up in the air, basically almost completely severed, top from bottom, and he had a mallet and this big pike. And, I mean, he was hammering with all of his might down this guy's leg.
Talk about pain-causing.
Yeah. it was just impressive that was actual surgery to repair the leg. He looked like he was putting down a railroad spike or railroad rail.
There is a procedure that's not usually covered by insurance. It's called ACI, ironically, and it's a procedure for cartilage, what they call debridement, where they take biopsied cartilage cells, they're removed, and then they're grown in a lab for 3 weeks to increase the number of the cells. Then they're transplanted back into the knee. And these cells are covered with a patch of membrane from the upper tibia, which is the lower leg bone. And this is a six-week regrowth process. You can't use your leg for 6 weeks, and it's usually for younger people, and it's usually not covered by insurance, so you don't hear of it too often because who has $150,000 to pay for a surgery this day and age?
Right. Yeah, you're going to see more and more in that with the 3D printing. They're, instead of just creating whole organs, the idea now is to create a 3D out of a material that your body won't reject and then grow your cells into that matrix to create things.
Right, and the 3D printers are already being used by a couple of companies, one in Canada, which prints tissue cells to create structures that resemble the meniscus to treat your muscle tears. And then there's a company in Belgium that has a 3D printable implant, and it's used. It's already been approved by FDA, and it's to fuse bones.
Right.
So the 3D generation of technology is here.
And that was a point of our earlier off-the-air discussion about the idea that you can only have these at a certain age because, you know, they only last for so many years. And you could conceivably take the gamble that they're going to come up with these new technologies in time that other knee, if it does wear out, it won't be the end of the world.
Well, the total knee replacement, it's what they refer to it as TKO, is only designed at this point in time, expected to last 15 to 20 years. And that's if you don't do any running, which they tell you can't do. So don't do it because it will ruin your joint. But the new surgeries are computer and robotic assisted.
Right.
So the surgeon's not as much involved with all the banging and pounding and that it was before. But
well, the other thing, too, is that they can have much finer movements because they move in a certain direction. But the robot says, no, we're not going to go that fast.
And they also are much more precise when they have
exactly
the bone structure already on the computer. And as you most of the time, they want you to be 60 years old before you have total knee replacement because of that longevity of the joint. And they call with a second surgery on that joint called recision surgery. And each time, because they cement the implant onto your knee, let's get into the details. They cut off your joints, okay?
Yeah.
They actually cut off the ends of your bones.
Right. That's what I was watching. The knee was completely apart.
Yes. And usually the insurance won't even pay for this unless you have bone-on-bone damage. And so when that occurs, those bones are pretty torn up anyway. So they cut those off as far back as they need to remove any damaged tissue. And then they cement on a metal joint, which is precise. They have many different sizes, and they pick the one that is closest to the size of your bone. And then they cement it on. So the knee itself on the ends are now metal, and on the ends of those they have a plastic material that creates your cartilage.
Now, when you talk about the 10-year thing, or 15 years, whatever it is, what about those ads that we're seeing on TV now where the company that makes the knee, the artificial knee, is promoting and they're showing these young people with sports running on this new knee and they're making it look like this is the way to go. If you got a bad knee or something happens, we'll put this knee in there and you'll be an athlete.
Well, they have a different procedure that's for younger people. Instead of cementing it on, the metal has a porous surface on it, and they adhere that temporarily to the end of your bone and allow your bone to grow into that porous surface.
Right.
And that your recovery is much longer, obviously, because you need time for that bone to regrow. Older people, their bone doesn't grow very well. And so they don't use that particular method on older people. That's reserved primarily for young people who have rapid bone growth, and then they will have a more stable. It's also easier for revision surgery, where if that joint wears out and they have to put in a new one, if you have it cemented on, they have to cut the bone again, and they have to cut off another section of your bone, which makes that bone shorter again, and to put on a new joint. Whereas if they have the type of bone implant that the bone grew to, they can just cut off the bottom of the implant and not have to remove more of your bone.
Hmm.
So you have a sturdier bone, a longer bone. So they say that they only want to do two recisions ever where they have to keep shortening your bone.
So the older person, the reason they don't do that on them is because they won't grow into that implant?
Exactly. And some older people have softer bones, or what they call osteoporosis starting. And those patients actually have a rod that's pounded down, which you saw when you were down into the bone marrow, because the bone's not strong enough on the ends to just allow the cement to hold it in. So they have to put that rod down. Luckily, I didn't have to have that.
What surgeons do is amazing when you can watch it live and see what they do. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and usually by the time you have TKO, you are already in a lot of pain. You're usually trying to function with bone on bone. You've had a lot of disability. You're not walking well. My stride was probably reduced to about 14 inches before my surgery.
Hmm.
So you need to have the surgery. That's why you're going in.
Wow. Yeah.
And it's major. It's a major surgery.
Yeah, I'm still impressed when I see people like you that have had the surgery, and you can't really tell they did, you know, unless you know them really well. Time for a commercial, well, not a commercial break, time for a station break. Sorry about that. This is KKR Examine Life on KKRN 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain. We are a community-supported station, which means you, the community, not only support us, but determine what we have on the air. If you love our program or don't like our program, email us at examinelife@peoplepc.com or call the station, and certainly donate to the station so that they can afford to put on the program you like. And we have quite an eclectic collection of music. If you don't listen to the music programs, try them out. They're pretty impressive. And we'll be back in a few minutes.
Your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream, commercially driven stations. From classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen.
Imagination will make that moment live. Oh, give me what you alone can give. I'll kiss the pill I dream on.
And we are back. This is Examine Life. I'm Steve.
I'm Pat.
And we're talking about joint replacements, which Pat is extremely familiar with.
Yes, I experienced that earlier this year. When we talked about the total knee replacement a minute ago, I failed to mention about your kneecap. They try to preserve your kneecap, and they actually shave the underside of your kneecap, and they put, it's kind of like a button on the back of it, is a plastic button that's inserted to allow the femur, your big muscle on your thigh, which has a knuckle-shaped end on it, to slide under the kneecap. So when you get an x-ray, you see the metal, but you also see your kneecap is normal tissue on the top side and then the plastic on the bottom.
Why is that they want to keep the kneecap?
Because it's hard to structurally recreate everyone's slightly different, and it's really hard. So if they keep the top of yours and they just put the plastic button on the bottom, then yours will look just like your other one. Supposedly.
Oh, okay.
Mine don't.
Is it cosmetic?
No, your kneecap is functional.
But I mean the reason they do it. You said look like the other one. You meant functionally it looks
yes,
like.
Yes, okay. Right. The metal that is used, by the way, is titanium or what they call cobalt chromium alloy that the implants are that they put in your joint. And the plastic is a high-density polyethylene or a silicon-type cap to replace your cartilage. And it's also permanently affixed to those metal pieces.
I remember we had a kid when I was a nurse's aide about 40 years ago in Southern California, and he had a tractor fall on him. He was about 9 years old, and they told him he couldn't ride horses again. and they said, if you do, it's going to break that hip because the metal doesn't bend. And during my tenure at the hospital, he came back in twice with a bent hip because he continued to ride the horses, and it didn't break the hip like they told him. It bent the hip, and so his leg would be sticking out sideways, and so they would bring him in. I didn't know a lot about it then, but apparently they did repair this kid's hip twice because he walked out of the hospital again.
My business partner, one of the main reasons she wanted to get past the pain and get back to riding her horse, and she now rides her horse after both hips have been replaced.
And I remember watching a surgery stuck in my mind, or not a surgery, but the post-op. I took care of these two people. One man had broken his hip. He was in his 30s, and there was an older man who had a hip replacement just from wear and tear, and he was in his 70s. And the young man was just whining all the time. Physical therapy, couldn't get him to get up. He wouldn't do anything. He was there for a few weeks. The 70-year-old guy, I think he was home in a few days. He was up the next morning walking around. And it's that thing about pain, you know. I think there's real pain in the world, but I think a lot of us out there need to start allowing a little pain in your life. People take these narcotics at the slightest call of pain.
Well, this is major surgery.
Well, and that's very painful.
Yeah, it is. And it's a lot of trauma to the soft tissue, the ligaments, tendons, the muscles. When we took the wrapping off my leg when we got home, not only was it swollen like an elephant's foot from my hip all the way down to my toes, but it was black and blue. I mean, it was, you could tell that you had been beat up. It was,
When I had abdominal surgery, my wife was freaking out because my whole abdomen turned purple and she thought I was dying and internally bleeding and everything.
Yeah, it's major surgery for them to cut you open and expose anything.
Yeah.
It's really is. And the stronger your ligaments, tendons, and muscles prior to surgery, the easier your recovery will be. And your surgeon will give you exercises to do prior to surgery and do them. It really makes a big dramatic difference in your recovery.
Do everything post and pre-op. I've just met too many people who didn't put in the effort and tolerate the pain of the PT, and now they've got lifelong problems, but just because of that.
Well, I only had one knee done, and they talk about people having a bilateral or both knees done at the same time. I cannot even imagine. The pain, the surgery turns your life upside down. And you'll be totally dependent upon someone for at least 2 weeks. And I only had one knee done. I cannot imagine having both knees done where you never get that. One, when you have the phenomenon of major surgery is fatigue.
Right.
It's amazing how tired you get. And after major surgery on one knee, you know, you did something for 10 minutes and you were exhausted. I can't imagine if you had both knees done. You would never want to get out of that chair.
And people do it. You know, when I think of what soldiers and sailors and Marines, everyone who comes back from war, the things that they go through, and, you know, most of them go on and build a life, and they don't ask for pity or anything else. They tough it out, and they get on with their life, and it's always impressive.
And you're going to have a lot of pain after you have a joint replacement. It's not just them cutting off your bones and pounding a new piece on there. It's all the damage to the soft tissue. Sometimes they even have to cut muscle. So that is painful when you get home. And the day after surgery, all I could wiggle were my toes. I mean, there was no, you know, lifting your leg or bending your leg. It was just let my toes work.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing. But if you think about it, major surgery like that is just a controlled version of what happens if in war or, you know, if you get in an auto accident. They're doing the same thing. They're just doing it under controlled conditions.
Yes. And they get you up the next day with a walker, the physical therapist does, to try and get you, one, upright, and to get you to learn to use a walker before you leave the hospital. And they make you walk about 10, 12 steps. But at the end of that 10 or 12 steps, you are exhausted.
Right.
Because, one, your body is still under, I think, a little bit of the anesthesia. It doesn't disappear in 24 hours. So your balance isn't quite what you want it to be. And then your leg doesn't work.
Yeah, and your body needs the energy for healing, too.
Yes, and when I had talked to them post-op about the inflammation, because I have all these allergies to drugs, so I was not given an anti-inflammatory. And when I'd call the PA, she would constantly reassure me that it's good to have inflammation. And I'm not quite sure why.
Well, I mean, inflammation has its role. The point of inflammation is really just to bring... it can cushion the joint, you know, if it wasn't surgery and you got injured and you're out in the middle of nowhere, can cushion the joint. But its primary function is to bring nutrients and healing chemicals to the joint. The problem is that inflammation can bring injury as well if it's not controlled.
My leg was swollen for 2 weeks. My incision could not heal because there was so much swelling pressure. And I finally resorted to an herbal anti-inflammatory that I had taken before called pycnogenol, that it was very relieving. They don't work instantly like prescription medications. So it took me probably one in the morning and one at night for a whole day before the inflammation started to go down. But once it started to recede, then the actual incision started to heal. And it was fascinating. I can remember sitting and watching my knee blow a blood bubble. Where the incision wasn't healing. And it was like 5 minutes for the bubble to be created and then about another minute for it to collapse and
seal. That's one of the problems when the inflammation's out of control is the very pressure reduces the right kind of blood flow to the site. And did ice not work very well?
Well, I had an ice sleeve type thing that they had sent home with the hospital that was a joke. And I finally got another one that was wrapped around your knee and the whole knee was encased and cooled down. But even without having any anti-inflammatory, they usually give patients Celebrex, and I'm allergic to that drug. And that is a combination of a blood thinner and a anti-inflammatory. So me not being able to take it, they didn't want to give me anything but Coumadin, which I would not give to anybody that I cared about ever.
No, and I'm not sure. I don't understand the mechanism as why a blood thinner would work.
Well, the danger of post-op stroke where you create a blood clot, and that's what they were concerned about.
Or pulmonary embolism.
Yes, because you're over 60. This is major surgery. You don't even have to be over 60 to create a blood clot. But they give you that blood thinner in order to prevent that first 2 or 3 weeks when it's highly likely you could create a blood clot.
That's also part of the reasons that they have you up walking. a sharp emergency room person, if you go into the hospital and you have symptoms that indicate like a pulmonary embolism or something, they'll ask you, Have you been on a long flight recently within the last few hours or something? Because it's that sitting still that allows those blood clots to form.
Yes. And they, you know, they have you breathe into the little thing to make sure you're breathing well, because you don't realize how.
Well, what that is actually an exerciser. It's called an incentive spirometer. And the point is, the little float is giving you incentive to take a deeper breath. And what it is an anti-pneumonia exerciser.
Well, it works.
Yeah.
I mean, the more you use it, which they tell you use it 10 times an hour.
Yeah.
And it's because between the pain medication and the blood thinners and all this stuff that you're taking and lying down, you get to where you're breathing so shallow, you don't even know you're alive.
Yeah, you hypoventilate. And the incentive spirometer, one of the things I've noticed is some in the hospital don't teach you the right way to use it, because the point is, it has the big float and then it has the little float. And what you're supposed to do is, in the morning and in the evening, you do the big float and you pull in the air as fast as you can and you get it as high as you can. The rest of the day, you just keep that little float floating very slow. You're breathing in very slow because air has momentum. So the slower you breathe in, the deeper the air goes. So you keep that little thing floating, and the nurse or the RT is supposed to be there telling you, keep going, keep going. And you breathe in as deep and as long as you can very slowly. And then at the end of the day, you do the big one again. And most people come home from the hospital, and I go see them, and I ask them if they have one, and they get it out. And they've always been taught to just breathe in as fast as they can.
Yeah. This one, they told me to breathe, blow it out, and make it go up.
Well, that was, I don't know what that was for.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand they use those to measure your flow, but they don't do anything. They just see that you're able to blow hard.
Yeah, and I still have one of those.
And if you're a politician, we know you can do that anyway.
That's right. But I was given oxycodone, and this is surprising to me, was I've never taken it before, but they give you a prescription for 120 pills.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like,
I don't know why
cow.
We have an opioid addiction problem, but there's some secret behind it.
Well, it took me a month to use those, but and part of it was, there's a couple of dangers with post-surgery. One of them is slipping and falling in the bathtub. So use one of those mats that won't slip. Another one, other than the blood clots, obviously, is you can get tangled up in the covers overnight. And this happened to me. My foot somehow got tangled up, and it caused trauma to the side, tendons, ligaments, that soft tissue. And I was only 3 weeks post-op, and the pain was excruciating.
I can imagine.
And it set me back a week in recovery.
I remember you talking about that.
It was terrible. And they didn't warn me about that at the time. But when I called in and said, I've got this excruciating pain, it happened in the middle of the night, I don't know what I did. They go, oh, this does happen on occasion. Well, why didn't you warn me not to try and turn over or lean over or whatever it was I did that got me tangled up in the covers? But sleeping is difficult. And a part of it is because you sleep a lot during the day on the medication. But the other part is I found that it fatigue during the day of doing your exercises. A week after surgery, I was at physical therapy, and they give you exercises to do at home. And any kind of exercise, I mean, getting up and going to the bathroom is exercise at this point.
Yeah.
And the fatigue during the daytime makes it difficult for you to sleep at night.
Right.
And one of the phenomenons of surgery is this incredible fatigue of major surgery. And you have to, and it will last 3 months.
Right.
It's amazing. And I was not prepared for that at all. No one told me about that. I read it in the book I bought, or I was given, that this is something that you have to expect after a major surgery.
Yeah, I had that. When I had abdominal surgery, I just couldn't take the pills. I took one the day of the surgery and one the morning after, and it was a lot of pain. Just moving was very painful, but just the medication. First of all, I don't know how opioid addicts sleep, because it made me awake, but I just didn't like the feeling. It kind of made my wife mad because I wouldn't take the pills, but I think pain's different for every person.
Well, as we fatigue during the day, our defenses to combat pain diminish.
Right.
So it makes your nights harder.
Yeah. I was for abdominal surgery, we had one of those elevating beds, which I never use, but I used it after that. That was the big thing. When I had that, I didn't need the pills. It was great. I was able to sleep, and it was pretty nice.
Well, you want to take those pain meds usually. I cannot even imagine doing the joint replacement without pain meds.
No, that's pretty painful.
And I did do the prescription, the 120 oxycodone. It took me a month to do it, but it's still, I cannot even imagine. Even towards the end, I would only take one at night because it was so much more painful at night to try and sleep and not use your knee in any capacity or your ankle, because your ankle is connected to your... Everything's connected to something else.
I think they have a song along those lines.
And it's amazing when you've had that type of major surgery. Not only do you have that loss of endurance and stamina, but you think that you should be able to do what you did before, and you can't. The simplest of things affects that knee joint.
Right. That's what I've noticed when you have surgery, like abdominal or whatever, that you forget.
Yes.
And you just kind of leap up, and then they're like, whoa. I have people with lung disease that have that problem. They just, even though they've had severe lung disease for years, they just, you know, they want to just leap out of their chair because that's what they always did, and all of a sudden they can't catch their breath, and they just forgot.
Yes.
They just don't know.
Yes. And the doctors and nurses will give you instructions at the hospital when you go to leave. Listen to what they tell you. They will tell you how to get in and out of a car right away. They will tell you how to get up and down from a chair. And you don't think this is a big deal? Wait till you go potty, and suddenly you have to get off. It's not as easy as it sounds.
But they may not tell you that your knee can get tangled up in the bedding.
That's right. Yeah. And don't have a walker with four wheels. I know they're really pretty, and they have that nice little seat, but you want the kind with only two wheels, because you're not stable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very rare that we do the walkers with four wheels. They're dangerous.
I know.
Some people have them, but... you know, it's the ones, I guess. A lot of people use them that don't have so much of a problem with joints. It's more that they can't breathe.
Or they're not stable.
Right.
Physical therapy has been very enlightening to me. I've learned a whole lot of things. My physical therapist has been fantastic. But some of the things that I learned was I could walk barefoot in the house once I was, you know, 4 weeks past surgery. I would start walking in the house with the walker or the cane or whatever. And barefoot seemed to be fine. But when I tried to put shoes on and go outside, it was like I was all fumbly and didn't know how to walk.
Hmm.
And interestingly, your feet have a lot of bones, tendons, nerves, and you have toes that when they're bare help you balance and walk and stabilize you. Well, when you put shoes on them, now your ankle and your knee have to do all the work of stabilizing you and keeping you upright and balanced.
That's insightful. That makes sense.
And so it was like, well, that's why it's so much harder to walk outside in a pair of shoes.
Somebody I knew once, you can get these shoes that are shoes, but they have individual toes.
Interesting.
And they're flexible. They're kind of like tennis shoes, but instead of just having a foot, they have toes.
That's
and so you can, I've never had a pair myself, but I've seen them and always interested in trying them to see what they felt like. It just feel like they'd be really comfortable to walk in.
Right, but I would wonder how durable they are for, like, if you kick something, because you know how once you put shoes on, you think your feet are protected.
Right, right, yeah. Well, there would be that problem, but it just seems like it would be, you'd be more agile on the ground, you know, walking around.
Yes, because your toes do help you balance and, you know, an ankle, everything's connected. Your toes are connected to your ankles. Amazing how you kick something when you have had, like, even the under counter at the sink, and you kick it with your toe, and it reverberates all the way up to your knee.
Yeah. I actually have a robot called Hero 2000 that I built in the 1980s from a kit, and it used to have an automated routine where it would sing that song and show you all of its joints.
So cute. Well, they are all connected. And physical therapy is critical to you regaining your range of motion and the full use of your joint. The arthritis, even if you have arthritis, physical therapy can help you regain some of that range of motion. And it's interesting how flexing your knee to the back, like you're standing and you lift your heel up to the back of your thigh, uses totally different muscles than if you just slightly kick it forward, or you go to lift it up like you're going to a march instead of just take a step. And when you've had total knee replacement, believe me, this is a major discovery on your part when you go to do these simple movements.
I can't say enough about a good physical therapist. That's solid gold.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. the other thing I learned in physical therapy was that I'm having difficulty with long walks, keeping my stride and gait even. And I was talking to the physical therapist about this, and she said that the ends of your bones and the cartilage have nerves in them that tell your brain where your joint is and how you're walking, even how you're balancing, irrespective of your fluid in your ear. This is about movement.
Right.
And when those
kinesthetics, I think they're called.
Yeah. And when those things are removed, now you don't have the ends of your bones and you don't have cartilage anymore. You actually have to reestablish communication with your brain via the ligaments and muscles to tell the brain where the joint is and how you're walking to make it consistent.
Hmm.
And that was...
That's something I wouldn't have thought of, but that makes perfect sense.
So you have to build new muscle memory. And I'm still in the learning curve of that. I'm not very good at that. But I'm only a few months post-op, so it's going to take me much longer.
Great for your neuroplasticity, though.
Yes, my brain cells have to work a little more. It's interesting. I probably have 75% recovery now. But I'd like to get to 90%. The surgeon says I never will run and I will never jump probably anymore because the knee is not going to like it. So it's that impact will be felt all the way up my body. So that's probably not something I'll ever want to do, let alone it's very hard on artificial joints. So,
and that's tough to deal with emotionally, I bet, huh?
Well, I really would like to get 100% back, but I'm now realizing that getting this extra 15% back is going to take a lot of work.
How about bicycling with any kind of effort?
Yes, I'm just starting to bicycle again because it's a total different motion than walking, the way you use that joint.
Well, it's not as impactful. It's
right.
Yeah.
If you have a pool or have the ability to swim, it's very good. There's a lot of resistance to water, but it's not something you're going to do the first week or two after surgery.
Right.
Because you just have to rebuild that muscle, especially if they've had to cut it. But they actually pull it apart, move everything to the sides if they can, and you can imagine them having to separate muscles to cut through your bone. That's going to be pulled apart a long time. And you know what happens when you go to the dentist and you have to keep your jaw open for a long time?
I was thinking of we used to do where I worked. We did anterior surgical fusions, and that's where they go in and work on your discs in your neck from the front. And they would take your esophagus and your trachea and had to move them apart. And so those things were bruised. And people sometimes used to complain of real, like, sore throats and so on because those tubes were bruised. I mean.
And they're not used to being touched.
Right.
They're used to just working. And you have what they call a strap that runs from your lower bone beneath your knee all the way up to your hip. That stabilizes you, and that it gets bruised terribly when you have this surgery. And it was hard for me to figure out why is the top of my thigh hurting.
Yeah,
and it was because that injury, that soft tissue, had already moved up and was not happy.
Like you said, it's all connected. I remember when I had tennis elbow, I had no clue what it was, but my elbow was hurting. And I didn't know. I finally ended up seeing a physical therapist or a orthopedic doctor first. And, of course, it was tennis elbow, which means you just had to put that little band that hit a tendon, and all of a sudden it was cured. It was an amazing thing.
Well, physical therapy teaches you moderate exercises that it's a use it or lose it. You need to use those muscles and ligaments and tendons or you will lose the ability to use them.
Yeah.
So it's important that you do that. But you will suffer fatigue. So don't allow yourself to rest. Do let yourself rest.
And eat nutritious food and
yes,
do your breathing exercises when you're sedentary and those
kind
of things.
And you will recover at a pace that's right for your body. Listen to what your body tells you.
Did they send you home with that breathing device?
Yes.
I think they were having you do it wrong. I'd be curious to see it sometime.
Okay. I'll show it to you. Because it was an exhale thing that they were telling me to raise it up when I exhaled. Little float.
No, I want to see it.
Okay.
I'm curious.
Okay.
There is a dearth of these days with medicine, with the Affordable Care Act and everything that it's done to medicine. But so you don't get all the information you need to, but when you get it, pay attention to it. And do the research yourself. The internet has a lot of garbage, but it has a lot of really good information. So use your brains and you can know what you need to know.
And a friend gave me a book about knee replacement and recovery, rehabilitation, and it has been a wealth of knowledge. Even I didn't get the book till I was 2 months post-op, but it was still very informative to me. The surgeon provided me one prior to surgery, and it dealt a lot with pre-surgery things that you should do, and I did all of those, and it was knowledgeable. But this one was different.
But the real question is, did you finish the coloring book?
No.
This has been Examine Life. We've been talking about joint replacements, among other things. Hope it's been an informative show for you. And we'll be back in, a couple of weeks or
three weeks? I think. First Monday of June.
This is KKRN, 88.5 FM on your dial. The music's up, so we need to go. I'm Steve.
I'm Pat.
Have a beautiful night.
Good night.